Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Just coming back from the offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Declan Drake sitting in for Reggie Corrigan. Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, looking out our studio window here in Dublin's Docklands this morning, it's grey, it's overcast, it's dull. But that's certainly what our show won't be this morning between now and 11 o'clock with the very best of local, national and indeed international sport as well. We'll be joined shortly from the UK by our very own Ken Doherty to give his thoughts on the sporting week. In racing, we'll be chatting to George McDonough, racing pundit and over-the-line show co-host as he previews this weekend's races and, of course, shares his lucky 15 with us. In GAA, massive weekend, the TG Carr All-Ireland Ladies Football Finals taking place at Croke Park tomorrow. Main focus, Dublin versus Meath in the senior decider at 4:15. Delighted to have GA commentator Brian Tyres, as well as Hannah Tyrrell and Denise Masterson. Looking forward to that. And Sean Lane will be joining us in studio to look back at last night's action in the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship and to ask the question, can Coola retain their title? In football, we have Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to chat about all things League of Ireland and, of course, those World Cup qualifiers involving their match there's in Ireland as well. And we'll be speaking to comedian Sir Steve O'Timothy about his upcoming star-studded charity box. Boxing wheelchair match. There's a mouthful at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. That against Olympian Paddy Barnes. And we'll also have writer and journalist Donnie Mahoney to chat about his new book on Jason Sherlock. And of course, Deirdre Smith will be along with golf as well. All things, both sides of the Atlantic in that particular sport. As usual, you can get in touch with us 087 11 55 777. WhatsApp is 087 188 1068. And of course, we're on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport. And our Twitter handle is at Sport1068. And Instagram as well, my friends. Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. So, as I say, a very action-packed programme between now and 11 o'clock. But first, let's have a little word with our very good friend, Ken Doherty. But before we do that, Ken, can we have our drum roll, please? No drum roll. Okay.
Viva Ronaldo.
Yeah. But listen, Dublin's Talking Sport has been shortlisted for an IMRO Radio Award. Yeah, delighted to be nominated in the regional sports category with some other great entrants. Thanks indeed to all our listeners for that. And great news to start your Saturday morning, Ken.
Yeah, fantastic news. We heard the news during the week and delighted for all the team, you know, Jane, yourself, you know, Reggie and all our contributors as well, of course, who have helped to make it so successful, you know, but most importantly, of course, to all the listeners. It's great news for us all. It gives a great boost. And, you know, we try and continue to be the best we can and still turn out a great show every week. But it's really all the help from our contributors and people, you know, like yourself and Jane and Reggie, of course, and but most importantly, all our listeners. It's fantastic news for such a, you know, a small station. We do our best, but it's a great show. We love doing it every week, Declan, you know, as you do as well. And it's great to get nominated for it, you know.
Yeah, we look forward to that. The 1st of October, I believe, the awards are being presented. It's a little bit disappointing, of course, that we can't attend in person, such as the times we live in, but it still won't lessen it if we actually come through and win it, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. Ken, we were keeping our fingers crossed in some respects going to Faro last Wednesday night in the World Cup qualifier against Portugal. More hope than anything else.
Yeah.
Tremendous team performance by the Irish, just being undone by the little Portuguese miracle man of Ronaldo.
I thought Ireland played fantastically well. It was a great, great match, great performance. I thought they were robbed. You know, they played their hearts out. They blocked every ball. You know, they threw their bodies. They gave a real team sort of commitment, and they played really good football. You know, you can see Stephen Kenny's influence, and it was so disappointing. I mean, it was absolutely devastating for the lads. They were out on their feet at the end, And I thought, even though Ronaldo's two headers were fantastic, absolutely top drawer stuff, I thought the referee robbed us, you know, with the time and you know, the time allowed. I don't think it should have been like. The lads must be very, very disappointed, but they have to forget about that now. Just take the positives out of it and look forward to the next couple of matches.
You fear the worst when you see Ronaldo stepping up for a penalty, considering the tremendous success rate that he has from the spot. But
yeah.
Young Gavin Bazunu is just growing in stature game by game, isn't he? Tremendous save.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I thought he was actually man of the match. I mean, there were so many great man of the match performances by the Irish lads, for sure. And I thought he was like one of our best players. You know, I thought he made some great saves, made some great blocks, and he's a great prospect. There's no doubt about it. But the save penalty from Ronaldo, I mean, there's not many keepers in the world can say that. Now, he doesn't miss many at all, but that was just fantastic. He saved a great free kick. He did some great things during the match. I thought, he's a fantastic prospect, and he's so young as well. And that match, even though he'll be very disappointed, you know, but I think that match will give him great confidence as well going forward, you know.
I think he's one of the best examples we have at the moment of the player progression path in Ireland. You know, he went from Shamrock Rovers, where he became a star quite quickly, moved to Manchester City, whose goalkeeper, I see, signed a new long-term contract during the week as well. Gavin, of course, is playing his football with Portsmouth at the moment in League One, but it's tremendous to have him, and also the likes of Quevin Kelleher there as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, as I said, he'd be getting great experience in Portsmouth, you know, playing for the international team now as well is great experience. So all these things, all these matches and experience will stand to him, you know. And there's no doubt he's going to be if he keeps going, progressing at the pace that he is at the moment, you know, if he doesn't get into the Manchester City team at some stage down the road, he'll be certainly touted by a lot of the other teams, you know. And I'm sure he's going to get his chance with a really big team if he does eventually leave Man City. But great prospect. And it's just like, there were so many great performances, as I said. And, you know, there were just, Ronaldo was just unbelievable, though. You know, the two headers of all the people, you know, he was always going to be the danger man. You know, he's not his usual sort of making a lot of like, attempts on goal, but he had the penalty save, a free kick as well, but he was just always going to be there. He was always the danger man, and particularly in the air, you know. But his header, his two-headed goals were just fantastic, you know.
We'll come back in a moment to his move to your beloved Manchester United. There was a rumour actually, Ken, that you were spotted outside Old Trafford getting your new Ronaldo shirt during the week. I don't know if that's true or not. Perhaps
number you seven. Are. Perhaps number seven. Viva Ronaldo. Yeah. I was texting all my scouse friends, you know, about Viva Ronaldo, and sending them all the videos that he's coming home. It's great excitement, I must say. I got a ticket yesterday for the game in Newcastle, so I'm really looking forward to that next Saturday. And it's going to be a wonderful atmosphere. I think not only for United fans, I mean, he's going to give Manchester United such a lift, such a boost, the fans and everything, you know. He's one of those great players who've left the club, like sort of Cantona. Well, he sort of retired, but they still sing his name, you know. They still sing Keane's name on the terraces, you know, even though he left as well. And Ronaldo was exactly the same, you know. And I remember watching him for the first time at Old Trafford, you know, and when he'd get the ball and run up the line, you know, everybody would stand up. He was one of those players that gave the whole crowd such a tremendous buzz by what he could do on the pitch, you know. And he's going to bring that back to Old Trafford, and that's going to be a great lift. And not only to Old Trafford, but for wherever he goes, he's going to bring attention. He's going to raise the roof with the crowd, and he's going to be a great addition to the Premiership. I'm just, really excited about him coming back, you know.
Yeah. Clever move getting that yellow card in the end, wasn't it, to avoid playing Azerbaijan during the week?
Yeah.
You could see the influence of Sir Alex there, maybe, on him, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. He knew what he was doing, didn't he? And he's not afraid of... he's a real showman. There's no doubt about that, you know. And you can see, I mean, is he 38 now or 36? But still in great sort of physical condition, you know. And I'm sure when all those young lads, you know, in the Irish team were looking at him, when he took off his top, and at 96 minutes, he was still buzzing around, you know. It's just, incredible to see. He'll have a great influence, I think, on those players down the road. And, of course, all those young lads who are playing for Manchester United as well. He will really raise the bar there big time.
I wonder who got the shirt. My money's on the referee. He seems to be begging for it in some
way. I think the referee might have an influence. But I thought, we got back to that time. I mean, 5 minutes was still a long time, but it was almost 6 minutes by the time the referee blew up, you know. And that, I think that's very disappointing. You know, in Ireland, I mean, Conley and I think Ida played so well up front. You know, Conley could have had a couple of goals. I think he could have had a penalty as well. I think he was shoved in the back when he had his chance on goal as well in the second half. That could have been a penalty. So I thought it was so disappointing for Ireland. But at the same time, you got to take the positives out of it. They played really, really well. It's great, great to see.
There comes a time, though, Ken, when performances and the quality of them have to be superseded by results. And that starts tonight against Kazakhstan at the Aviva Stadium from 5 o'clock. A must-win game for the Irish, really. And 25,000 people there to watch it tonight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the crowd would really get behind the team as well. You know, it'd be a great atmosphere there. I'd love to be there now to be able to see it. But but I think you can see the sort of green shoots of recovery for Stephen Kenny and the team and what he's trying to influence on the team. I thought they played really good football. They were very confident on the ball, playing out the back, you know. So, yeah, the results are a big thing. I'm sure they'll get the result tonight. They have to pick themselves up and I'm sure the crowd will give them a great lift and a great welcome home as well.
They'll certainly have to. And speaking of great welcome homes, Kelly Harrington got a great welcome home when she brought the gold medal back around the corner to us here a couple of weeks back. And the news yesterday, and I believe that she's staying in the amateur game, which is great for it.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, I think it's a brave decision for her. You know, a lot of people would have been sort of waving a lot of sort of checkbooks in her hand and saying she could have win this and earned this type of money. But I think it's very admirable of her, you know, that she wants to stay amateur. She wants to go to Paris in 3 years' time and try and win another goal. Like, that would be amazing. I mean, she's already a fantastic hero or heroine to all the Irish for what she achieved in Tokyo. And she got a wonderful welcome home, a well-deserved welcome home, and I was delighted for her. You know, it brought a little tear to my eye watching it, because I remember, like, when I came back when the open top bus, it's a fantastic day out for family and friends and stuff like that, you know. So, yeah, it's very admirable of her, and I'm delighted for her.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, it's probably the right decision, and good luck to her, you know.
Yeah, maybe the shortened Olympic cycle might have had something to do with it as well. It's a year less, of course, to Paris as well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, it's still, like, when you think about 3 years of your career, when you could be in the pro ranks, you could be on the same bill maybe as Katie Taylor, you could possibly have a bout against Katie Taylor down the road. I mean, you can imagine the amount of people that would want a ticket for that, and the money that she could be earning from that. She certainly won't do the same, or won't earn the same as an amateur. But, you know, as she said, and quite rightly so, it's not all about money, you know, and she wants to, you know, continue on her great legacy, try and win another gold in Paris. And that would be, you know, the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and you mentioned Katie Taylor there, and of course it's crept up on us, really, but she's fighting tonight in her beloved Leeds when she takes on Jennifer Ann. A lady who, I believe, Ken, had her second child only 6 months ago.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, well, it shows the commitment of it's going to be a tough fight. I mean, and Katie Taylor, you know, she's such a, she's been so good as a professional. She's had a few tough fights, you know, she's had a few close ones as well. So this is going to be another tough fight for her. She's a really good boxer, this girl. So I'm really looking forward to that tonight as well. It should be very, very interesting. You know, I think she's done fantastically well, what she's done, and particularly signing up with Eddie Hearn. You know, he's really sort of promoted her well. He's got her some great fights, getting her on the TV, getting her in front of, like, big crowds, and she's doing brilliant, you know, and the best of luck to her.
Yes, indeed, the best of luck to her.
Lovely. Very disappointed about Dublin, Declan. You haven't mentioned Dublin yet, you know?
That's so last year, Ken. So last year.
I know. It seems so long ago, but it's still fresh in all our minds, you know?
The ladies are playing tomorrow in the All-Ireland final, so that's what our focus is on this
the
weekend.
Jackies, when we
get you back to the Emerald Isle, we'll meet somewhere and have a chat about that in great depth, I'm sure.
Oh, but yeah, listen, yeah, yeah.
Thanks very much, Niamh, for joining us on the programme.
No problem.
Enjoy your weekend. And if you can see the Irish game somewhere this evening, enjoy that as best you can as well.
Well, I'll definitely be watching, and I'll definitely be buying a short. I might even get one for you and Reggie as with Ronaldo on the back. Yeah, maybe one for Joe Harrington as well, you know, and Jane there in the studio.
You can get me a set of snooker lessons with Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Viva Ronaldo.
That's enough of the hero worship. Thank you, Ken.
Cheers, Declan.
Take care.
All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye. Ken Doherty on the line there from the UK. Just a little bit excited about Ronaldo's move back to Manchester United last week. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 FM with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Stay with us. We're back after this commercial break. Sport and Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. 22 minutes past the hour of 9 on this grey, gloomy Saturday morning in Dublin City. If you want to get in touch with us on the programme, please do so. 087-1155-777 is our text number. WhatsApp 087-188-1068. And on that, Sean from Drimnagh says, yeah, it's very easy to share Ken's excitement at the return of Ronaldo to Old Trafford, but United will not win the league this season. Okay, do you agree with that or disagree? That's the WhatsApp 087-188-1068, and of course Facebook is Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram at Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Got to get my head around this new technology and how to cope with it. Right, we're going to turn our attention now on the programme to golf. And absolutely delighted to be joined on the line this morning by Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you this morning?
Yeah, very good. Looking forward to the weekend.
Yes, indeed. And action, of course, on both sides of the Atlantic. Let's start in the States and the Tour Championship. Things are heating up nicely in that particular competition this weekend, Deirdre.
Yeah, they are. But unfortunately, Rory's a little bit far back. I mean, he's, you know, Cantlay and Ram have sort of separated themselves in the field. They've gone to 16 and 17 under. And I mean, obviously, Cantlay started at 10 under. So he's playing really well. And he's used his advantage really well to stay on top and not let the others catch him. So Rory's at 8 under. It's a big ask over the weekend. But look, you never know. 9 shots, it's a lot. He's played, there's really good signs of great progress for him. His driving has improved and his wedge play has really been dialed in. So he's there still, you never know, over the weekend. And I'm sure Cantlay is kind of tired. He won last week in a really dramatic playoff with DeChambeau. So you never know. It's golf's a fickle game. Anything can happen. So if Rory hangs about, but it's a marvellous finale. Look at the lineup there. Cantlay, Ram, DeChambeau, Thomas, English, Finau, Smits, McIlroy, Spieth, Oosthuizen, all there in the top 10. Sure, it's a marvellous finish to the year. So it's really looking forward to how it's going to play out over the weekend.
Yeah, it's not only important for that championship, of course, but of course the Ryder Cup is only a few weeks away, and I think we must take the opportunity of wishing our captain, Padraig Harrington, a very happy 50th birthday recently as well. He'll be watching these events quite anxiously, looking just to see, you know, what players are in form, and he's thinking about making those pairings in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, look, I saw on his Instagram account he had... I'm 49 plus one and I'm a rookie again, because now he's eligible for the seniors tour. So it'll be interesting to see how he does on that. But I mean, he must be licking his lips to think that Hovland and McIlroy and Ram are just on fire. And also Lowry. Lowry's played himself right into it. And I really think that he's going to have a massive influence in the team room, because he's that kind of a character. And he could be the new Ian Poulter of the Ryder Cup. And I think Harrington will be really looking forward to the challenge and has a marvellous chance now in the States, because everybody's just seems to be just playing well at the right time for him. And he's going to be a great captain and we'll have a massive interest in it in this country for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It's a tremendously nervous time for him too, I'm sure, as he, you know, weighs up the options, as I say, of the different pairings, making sure the balance is right in the style of play between the two players he picks at certain times before it comes to the singles on the last day.
Yeah, look, he has a lot of experience. He's played so many times himself. He's been in the team room as a captain, as a vice captain. He'll have an awful lot of that groundwork done before ever he gets to the tournament. I mean, he won't be relying on a you know, an emotional pick or an emotional charged sort of choosing of pairings. He'll have a lot of that groundwork done because that's the kind of him. You know, he's one of those characters who just needs to be ultra organized, and that's the way he's always played his own golf, and that's how he's always done things best. And I would say he has the pairings in his mind already. And he'll just see how things go on the day, and he'll have options then if things don't, one doesn't work, the other will work. I mean, he's a master tactician, so I don't think that, you know, I think Harrington will have a lot of that work done, and then he'll have, you know, he'll have talked to the likes of McGinley and, you know, and other past captains, and he'll have got a lot of feedback from them and players. I mean, at the end of the day, players have to be comfortable who they're playing with, and you know, when in a team sport like that, it's particularly in the alternate shot, the foursomes, it's really about how two players get on off the golf course as well as on the golf course. So, you know, a lot of that groundwork will be done, Declan. So I'd have no worries that I've full confidence that he'll get those pairings right.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you there about the taking counsel from past captains and players, and there's certainly a wealth and a depth of knowledge and experience there that he can rely on, not least, of course, his fellow dub, Paul McGinley, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and for McGinley was a marvellous captain. I mean, his success in the Ryder Cup was just phenomenal, and against a highly fancied American team. And you know, the Americans, it looks on paper like they're in a little bit of disarray. There's a lot of not being made of the argument between the kind of the spat between DeChambeau and Spieth. And, you know, Reed is a bit of a volatile character. But, you know, they could just be little feelers thrown out by the Americans to kind of make the Europeans feel that they're a better team. They have a better team ethic and team bonding. But I wouldn't be listening to too much of that. I mean, the phenomenal players, you know, Cantlay, DeChambeau, Thomas, English, Finau now playing really good golf and really believing in himself. I certainly wouldn't be fooled by any of that stuff. You know, certainly McGinley did all the right things, made all the right choices, and there's no doubt that Harrington will have learned a lot from him and will be talking to him on a regular basis and you know, using him as probably as a soundboard as to who he thinks should play with whom and whose games match up with different people. So, and that's the kind of Harrington. He just won't be a solo run. He'll be using every opportunity he can to gather as much information so that he's making the right decisions for the right reasons.
What do you think it is, Deirdre, about the Americans? They always seem to have this ability to split themselves open and cause their own difficulties, which then, of course, affects their game when they come together as a group.
I suppose they're probably indulged from a very young age. And then, you know, they're so, you know, America is a massive country, and they're so good, and they're at the top of the game in America, and perhaps feel that they're, you know, they're world beaters before ever they come out of there. And then, whereas in Europe, I suppose maybe we all start from more humble beginnings, maybe from the point of view of our own country. And you know, if you think about, you know, there's 5 million people in Ireland, and you know, we generally don't talk ourselves up. We're very much, you know, we probably play our sports with a little bit more humility. And in America, they're kind of talked up a lot, and they talk themselves up a lot, and I suppose that leads to maybe division, because people perhaps are, you know, other players maybe feel that, you know, they have to, you know, it's kind of dog eat dog a little bit. And it's hard to know, you know, I they're just such big personalities. And, you know, like DeChambeau there is certainly not endearing himself to the media in any way. And he seems to be making enemies on and off the golf course. But you have to hand it to him. I mean, he's just a remarkable player, and he's pushing the boundaries of golf. And it's hard to know, really. I don't know. And yet they all come from one country. Whereas in Europe, it's much maybe the adversity in Europe, the fact that we probably have always been the underdog, that has helped. You know, whereas the Americans sort of rock up and feel they're the best and feel maybe that they don't have to have teamwork, they just can go out and play their own games. But, you know, you can't do that in foursomes and you can't do that in four balls, because if it goes wrong and you're not getting on with your partner, then the momentum is really shifted to the opposition. So it's an interesting question, Declan. I don't have all the answers to it, but that's about the best I can do with it, to be honest.
You've done fairly well, in fairness to you, not I have to say. But we certainly look forward to that event in the next few weeks in France. Now, the ladies' version of it will be coming up soon too, the Solheim Cup, and we'll be looking forward to that with Leona Maguire, of course, on the team. Confidence high amongst the Europeans, would you say, going into that one?
Yeah, they are. It is, and I hope it's not too confident. You know, I mean, all the players are playing really well on the European team. This is what I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I am looking forward to the Tour Championship, but this is what I'm really looking forward to this weekend. And again, it's due in no small part to Leona's involvement in it. I mean, this is a massive day for Irish sport, and it's a massive day for Irish golf and Irish ladies golf. I just don't want to push it because it's a ladies event, or it's just a massive thing for Irish golf that we have somebody on the Solheim Cup for the first time ever. And I can't overstate that enough. There'll be a lot of people watching the Solheim Cup today who never watched it before. And there'll be a lot of people watching golf today who never watched golf before. And they'll be watching the Solheim Cup because of Leona Maguire. And that, to me, is really the big winner today for us here in Ireland. The pairings today are very, very, they're very tasty, I can tell you. Leona is paired with Mel Reid. She's playing against the Cordas. It's a really tough draw, in my opinion. She's out in the third match this morning. It's just the Cordas are like Jessica Cordas. She's just on fire at the moment, you know. And they were undefeated the last time in 2019. And the chemistry between them will be just amazing as two sisters. They'll know what each other are thinking. I knew she'd play Maguire in the alternate shot in the foursomes because she's just so steady. She's just like a robot. She just stands up, she hits it, and she'll be there or thereabouts all the time. She's paired with Mel Reid. It's a tough draw. They've nothing to lose. All the pressure will be on the Cordas, so hopefully that'll be an advantage to them. If they can hang in there and hang in and even squeeze a half out of that match, it'll be a massive half for Europe. But they're really good pairings. Europe, Norquist and Castron, she's the hottest rookie at the moment. She's at two wins. Norquist has just come off a major win. That's a great matchup in the first match against Kang and Ernst, but they're fierce competitors. Ewing was the match play champion in America. They're both LPGA winners. So that'll be a tight one in the first match. Look, it's always tight. It's 18 holes. Anything can happen. And then the final match is Holland Pedersen. I fancy Europe in that one. They're playing Lexi Thompson and Brittany Altamore. Plenty of power on show. But it's a real opportunity for Maguire to showcase herself. And maybe I'm sorry to be kind of focusing on her, but, you know, it's just a massive day for Irish ladies golf. And it's a day I've waited for in all my years playing golf, that we'd have somebody on the Solheim Cup. Because we just need that. We need that in Ireland. We need it to grow the game, just like the men's game has grown and has got better and better since Harrington and McDowell and Clark have made their breakthrough. And then look what's come on online, you know, with McIlroy and Lowry. So look, it's a great day for Irish golf, and it's a great day for Irish ladies golf and Irish ladies sport, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same effect in any other sport. I mean, after, you know, Kelly Harrington's success in the Olympics, and even, you know, Katie Taylor before that, young girls want to take up boxing, which is fair enough. That's what they want to do. You know, the Dublin ladies footballers doing well. That permeates down to young girls as well, who want to be the next Tana Tyrrell or whatever. So, you know, if young girls around the country aspire to be the next Leona Maguire, well, that's absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure that you've seen the growth rates soar in the sport amongst ladies and young girls over the last number of months as well, particularly now that we're getting back to some semblance of normality in life.
Yeah, look, Irish golf, ladies golf has grown in the last few years, but this will be the biggest single reason why Irish ladies golf will improve. And that's no disrespect to all the work that's going on all around the country in terms of, you know, the Golf Ireland and what they're doing and the programs they have in place, and and the pros that they have in there, you know, working day in, day out. That all that has to still go on. But you need the people coming through. You need numbers. And we haven't had those numbers, and we haven't had those numbers aspiring to that kind of level. We haven't had that growth in the younger end, in the junior end. It's fine. You have a lot of ladies taking up golf at 20 and 30 and 40 years of age, which is fine, and it's wonderful for the game. And hopefully then they will bring their own children into golf when that happens. But to see somebody up there at the very top of the game, I mean, Solheim Cup is the pinnacle, just like the Ryder Cup is. And to see her up there today and actually playing the first match, you know, the first day of the foursomes, it's to me it's groundbreaking. And I can't praise Leona Maguire enough for what she has done for herself, for Ireland, and for Irish golf going forward. And it's only in years to come that we will really appreciate how she broke the glass ceiling for us in this country.
Yeah, we certainly wish her the very best of luck in that particular competition. As you say, a prestigious competition, just like the Ryder Cup is for the men. Finally, Deirdre, can we take home the prize after the weekend?
It's a big ask. I mean, away from home, it's just like in the men's. You know, at home, you have all the home support. You know, you're very comfortable. Unfortunately, you know, it's a terrible shame Leona's parents can't travel over. I mean, it's such a massive achievement for them because of their hard work. I mean, I saw it for years, you know, taking her to all the different tournaments. It's a tough ask. I do think that European golf and European ladies golf is on the rise. All these players are very comfortable in America. A lot of them have won on tour. Maguire hasn't had a win, but she's really has been thereabouts, but for really good performances by Corda, she would have won. I think it's their best chance in a long time to bring it home, to be honest. I think Katrina Matthew is a fantastic captain, and she has some great experience there in the team room with Pedersen, who hold the winning putt in the Eagles, and then with that serial winner from Sweden. Oh, it's gone from my mind, but she's retired now. I just can't think of her name. So it's the best chance they have in a long time to win in America, and she'll be only the second captain to do it back to back. And certainly, I'll be cheering her from my couch over the weekend.
Yes, just kind of say that the old phone will be on D&D or switched off over the course of the weekend. Deirdre, thank you very much, Niamh, for joining us on the programme this morning, giving those insights into both the men's and the ladies' golfing scene. Enjoy the Solheim Cup over the weekend, and we take this opportunity once again to wish Leona Maguire and her colleagues every success in that particular competition. Thank you, Deirdre.
Absolutely, Declan. Take care.
Yes, Deirdre Smith there, one of Ireland's leading amateurs, and one would have to say one of the great pundits, I think, on golf as well. Tremendously insightful chat there with Deirdre. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's just coming up now to 20 minutes to 10. We'll be back after this commercial break. Stay with us. Good morning and welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake here sitting in for Reggie Corrigan this morning, and we're here till 11 o'clock with all the very best of local, national and international sport. We've already had golf and our little chat with Ken Doherty, of course, as well. We're going to turn our attention now shortly to racing, but before I do that, just a message in here on our Twitter at Sport1068 from Alison Jordan, who is based in Lucan. Just wanted to wish Leona Maguire and the Solheim Cup team every success. Great to see a young lady from Cavan trailblazing as she is. Absolutely no doubt about that. Deirdre hopefully will be back on the programme with us next week to reflect on that participation of Leona Maguire in the Solheim Cup. But now, one of the most eagerly anticipated slots on the programme every week is the racing slot, and of course the Lucky 15. So delighted to be joined on the phone this morning by George McDonough, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host. A very good morning to you, George.
Very good morning, Declan.
Thank you. Thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Plenty to get our teeth into on the racing front. I suppose we'll get straight into it with the Lucky 15. And your first choice this afternoon is racing at Haydock.
Yes, Declan. Today, one of the great sprint races that unfortunately has suffered from the popularity of a glut of graded racing. The Haydock Sprint Cup was always, to me, an iconic race. It meant that winter was coming in because it was the last day, up to 10 years ago, the last Group 1 sprint of the year across Channel. Now, of course, we have Champions Day and so on and so forth at Ascot. But it was always a high-quality race won by normally the champion sprinter. This year, yes, there's a very good sprinter that's favourite, a horse called Starman from the Ed Walker Yard, who impressed many when winning the July Cup. He was impressive to the eye, in my view, when you looked at the race once. But when you looked at the race in depth, I don't think his superiority over the field deserves to see him at even money, 11-10 against favourite, to lift today's prize. On that occasion, he was on the stand side where the majority of the runners came. Three stayed on the far side. That was down to two after 2.5 furlongs because Oxted, who had won the race last year, came stand side. He was placed again. But Art Power, to me, in this race at 9-1, is, to me, cracking value. He stayed on the far side on that occasion, ploughed a lone furrow, but was only beaten about 2.25 lengths into fourth place behind Starman. Now, he has since disappointed at Goodwood behind Sueza in the King George the Six Stakes. But that's over 5 furlongs at Goodwood, Declan. Totally different track. He's never won a Group 1 Art Power, but I would rather back Art Power at 9-1 each way than back Starman at even money. I think Art Power can favour front runners on the sprint track, and I think if Art Power gets away and gets on into a rhythm in front, I think he's going to take an awful lot of beating at 9-1, and that's my first selection.
Very good. And your second selection is also at Haydock, but it's in an earlier race, and you're going for Valley Forge in the 220.
Yes, I'm going for Valley Forge, Declan. This time of the year, three-year-olds in staying distances, you've got to watch them because you can find out that these horses could progress late in the season and into next season. And one of the great three-year-old handicaps, to me, the best three-year-old handicap of the year, is the Melrose Stakes at York. It's the same day as the York Tote Bar, the Saturday it is these days, 14 furlongs, a real test for a three-year-old. But it's known as the three-year-old's Ebor, but this horse really showed, to me, an awful lot. He won by a half length on the day, but I think he was valued for a lot more. He's gone up £7 in the rating. Prior to that, he was a winner also at Fosse Last, but that was his first handicap. And for a three-year-old, gradually stepping up a distance this year, I think it really was a very good performance. There's plenty of alternatives. Vino Vitrix in the race, the winner of his last two. Andrew Balding's team have been in superb form this season. David Probert has been riding out of his skin. But Valley Forge gives me the impression that he will progress. His half-length win over Mashour, I think he was valued for a lot more. The £7 hike in the weights, I think also he will manage that. And to me, I think he's a very, very good chance. This is a progressive stayer and a horse I could see going very well in next year's edition of the Ebor at York. I know it's a long, long way away, but I think this is a very progressive horse.
What should we be able to get him at in the market, George?
I would trade at 9-4. A 2-1, 9-4, I think is a good price. Any shorter, you've missed the value, but I think if you get 9-4, Declan, it's very good value about Valley Forge. I think he's a progressive horse.
Okay, so far you have Valley Forge at 220 at Haydock and Art Power in the 330 at Haydock as well. Now you're switching tracks for your third choice, George. You're moving to Kempton and the 240 race there, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, is Hookham, is it? Or Hookham?
We'll go with Hookham.
Hookham, okay.
Again, a lot of these runners are progressive today. The four selections, I think, are actually, well, apart from Art Power, who's probably exposed, but he is a horse that deserves to win Group 1. The other three are progressive sorts. Hookham, a four-year-old. I'm not the biggest fan of the all-weather racing because of the difference in surfaces. You've got to watch what you're at. But Hookham has won on this track at Kempton before. He's won his last two races. He was, to me, very impressive when winning the Geoffrey Freer Stakes at Goodwood a couple of weeks ago. We tipped him up on that occasion. That was a decent performance. But he's third at Royal Ascot behind Wonderful Tonight and Broom. That is rock solid form. Really rock solid. He has to give away £3 to his rivals this afternoon. But I can see this horse picking up with the Breeders' Cup and the Prix de l'Arc and Champions Weekend next weekend and the Champions Weekend at Ascot. There'll be a lot of other decent quality group races to be picked up before the season is over. And I can see Hookham picking up a couple more of these. He'd be very short, I would say about 4 to 5. I'm not the biggest fan of putting in odds on shots, but I think this horse will win. And I just think that he will outclass his rivals.
Okay, and then finally, you're moving to Ascot, the 3:10 there, and Waran is your tip for that one. George, explain that one to us.
This is the nap of the day for me, Declan. This is the one I want to be with out of the four. Again, we tipped him up at York 2 weeks ago. He absolutely got no luck in running. It was like trying to queue for a ticket to Old Trafford next Saturday, the way he was locked up behind horses. And like Ken Doherty, I am awaiting. I will be there next Saturday. This is heaven to us.
You're not one of them as well, George, are you?
A proud season ticket holder, Declan, for over 22 years at this stage.
Move on. back to the racing, George.
That's why life is about opinions in sport, especially,
absolutely,
Declan.
Absolutely.
Warhan, behind a wall of horses, he fell out of the stalls on that occasion. No disrespect to Kieran Schumach, who was riding Sir Michael Stout's runner on that occasion. He ended up finishing fifth with no room whatsoever on more than three occasions. And on that day at York, as has been happening in the last number of years at York, the horses came to the stand side. And it's very, very hard to make up ground when they do that, because you're more or less pinned against the rails. And he had fallen out of the stalls. He didn't get an opportunity. And then turning into the straight, he was forced to check again. Again, his run was blocked a couple of times. Now, Ryan Moore, it's a personal opinion, Ryan Moore probably hasn't been having his best season. He's not enjoyed much luck riding at Ascot this season. Hopefully today will change. Ryan Moore is a top quality jockey, and he doesn't lose it overnight. I think he'll need to be close to the pace. That run behind Migration and St. Jerry, they're good yardsticks, and that was very good for him. Prior to that, he had won at Newmarket, won 5.5 lengths, beat Big Kitten, hosed up on that occasion. And prior to that, again, was a winner at Pontefract from Pennymoore, who has franked the form since. Steps up today from 10 to 12 furlongs. I think he's tailor-made for it. 3-1 available an hour ago was beginning to evaporate. I got on at 3-1, thankfully. I think it's a very good price, and I think this will win. Of the four, I think he's the nap of the day, in my personal opinion. I think this horse will relish the step up to 1.5 miles today.
Okay, well, we'll have that lucky 15 up on all our social media channels a little bit later on when our producer, Jane McNamara, is finished looking for a ticket to the All-Ireland Football Final next weekend against Tyrone. I don't know whether you're able to help her out on that one or not, George, but she's asking everybody and anybody, including myself, any chance of that priceless piece of paper for next Sunday.
70 years is what I'll say, Declan. 70 years they've been waiting.
you're from the other side of the fence in Galway, aren't you?
I'm from Galway, and 70 years a long time.
You're hoping 70 becomes 71, are you?
I have a lot of friends in Mayo, Declan, and the smart can answer I always give to them is that if their grandfathers were leaving Croke Park when Mayo last won the All-Ireland, and somebody told them, but before we win another All-Ireland, there would be two popes alive at the one time, I don't think they'd have believed you.
That's a very good way of looking at it. It's an excellent way of looking at it. But before we leave it this week, George, there's some big news on the domestic front for Ger Lyons during the week in Roscommon, the trainer reaching a milestone in his career.
Absolutely fantastic. Those who know Ger Lyons, a very quiet man, doesn't go racing a hell of a lot. His brother Shane is the representative on the course. It's a great family operation. Wonderful guy. Came up the hard way, took a punt on training back around 1994. Had his first winner at Navan in October of that year. A horse called Melanong won.
George? Well, unfortunately, we've lost George there, but tremendous insight. I'll just give you the lucky 15.
It's wonderful to see this because it's a great operation. Colin Keane has been loyal to the yard for so long. It's wonderful. And to see them win with Ophaya at Roscommon, to me, it just touched the strings in your heart, because to know the lads personally, you know the effort they put in. And the horse is owned by David Sprash and Sean Jones and Ger's wife, Lynn. And those people have been so, so loyal to Ger Lyons over the years. They're individual owners. They have their own horses. But you'll obviously see Sean's two young sons decked out in the white, blue sleeves and blue dots at the races when they can go. And then a couple of years ago, to increase probably the quality of the animal in the yard, they formed a little syndicate amongst themselves and they ran a couple of horses jointly. So they were able to pool their finances together to buy a better quality horse for Chair. And I think that shows you the way the close-knit team that's at Glenburnie, and it was wonderful to see them having their 1,000th winner this week.
Yeah, super stuff. Congratulations to Ger. George, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. We'll repeat that lucky 15 now, and we look forward to talking to you next week again on the programme. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Declan, and the best of luck to Joe with a search for that ticket.
Got a meal of my gut. That's George McDonough there, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host. The Lucky 15, Art Power 330 at Haydock, Valley Forge in the 220 at Haydock, Hookham at 240 rather at Kempton, and Waram at 310 in Ascot. Thanks indeed to George for that. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We'll be back after the commercial break coming up with the news at 10 o'clock with GAA and soccer indeed with Alan Cawley amongst other things as well. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us on the programme, feel free on our usual WhatsApp numbers and that as well. Join us after the commercial break and the news at 10. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake here sitting in for Reggie Corrigan this morning. We're here with you until 11 o'clock. Now, just before the break and the news there, and thanks indeed to Adrian for that, we had our Lucky 15 with George, and I'll just give it to you again in case you did miss it, and it will be up on our social media channels after the programme. The first selection was Valley Forge in the 220 at Haydock, 9-4, 2-1, George. George thinks in the market there. Art Power also at Haydock. That's in the 330, 9-1 each way. Hookham, 240 at Kempton, 4-5. And his nap is Waran in the 310 at Ascot. So the very best of luck with that. And if you want to get in touch with us on the programme, text 087-1155-777. WhatsApp 087-188-1068. A message in from Killian in Drumcondra wanting to know, are we covering the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship? The answer to that, my friend, is yes. Sean Lane has joined us in studio and will be along with us a little bit later to discuss last night's action. And indeed, ask the question, can Coola retain their county title? More about that a little bit later. As well, of course, as a big preview of the TG Carr Ladies All-Ireland Football Final between Dublin and Meath, the Croke Park tomorrow. Amongst others, Breen Tyres, lead commentator for TG Carr, will be joining us there for that. Now, we're going to turn our attention on the programme to a book about a Dublin hero, Jason Sherlock. It's been written by writer and journalist Donnie Money, who joins us now on the line. A very good morning, Donnie, and thank you for joining us on the programme this morning.
Declan, how are things?
We're very good in here this morning. It's still a little bit grey and overcast down the Docklands. How is it where you are this morning?
It's brightening up a bit, but yeah, same. It's a great start as well, but hopefully it'll come good around the time Ireland play Azerbaijan today.
Yes, indeed. More about that indeed with Alan Cawley a little bit later in the programme as well. It's a nice little link there because the man that you've wrote this book about, Jason Sherlock, of course, played a bit of soccer in Ireland, of course, with UCD and Shamrock Rovers as well. First of all, Donnie, what was the inspiration behind writing this book for you?
Well, this is the second book I've written in the Great Irish Sports Star series, which is published by O'Brien Press. And we're looking for, I suppose, inspirational stories for young readers from the world of sports, but also characters who, I guess, have really unique and, I suppose, inspirational stories for younger readers. The first book I did was about the Gooch, Colm Cooper down in Kerry, and I was looking to tell a story that might have maybe a bit more kind of resonance for modern readers. And Jason's story is, on top of his athletic achievements, his own personal journey is quite fascinating in his own way. And there's just so much in it that when you think back to the amazing summer of 1995 and Jason at 18 kind of really just swept the whole nation with him. Like, I just thought that this was a great story to tell, and I thought it would really resonate with today's younger Irish readers.
Yeah, it's one of the abiding memories, of course, of Jason over the last couple of years was as a Muir Fornia with Jim Gavin and Croke Park and racing onto the pitch every couple of minutes to give instructions all over the place. Of course, it's a position that's redundant now in the game. But he had a tremendous career with Dublin, both as a player, obviously you mentioned 95, that glorious summer of 95, and indeed as a selector and that as well over the years. So there was plenty of good quality raw material for you to work with there.
There was, yeah. And to be honest, most of the narrative of the book really deals with Jason's teenage years and his childhood. Even, you know, his background is well known, but it's fascinating, really, in a way. You know, we look at how diverse Ireland has become now, but his father was from Hong Kong, and, you know, he grew up as Asian Irish in a, you know, at a time when Ireland was very, I guess it was, everybody was the same and looked the same. And, you know, he had to kind of deal with a lot of racism and as a kid, and really kind of he was this kind of trailblazer in that way. But he was also a really, really avid sportsman. He was, you know, he played for Ireland as a basketball player, represented Ireland internationally. He was, he was brilliant. St. Kevin's boys players went over to West Ham for a trial, nearly, you know, it was in that summer of 95. Of course, Liverpool were very interested in bringing him over as well. So, you know, these books kind of tell the stories of how these great sportsmen, how they were made and the makings of them as teenagers. And so Jason, you know, while, you know, he had many brilliant days for Dublin and Rovers, you know, in his 20s, he had quite a fascinating teenage career as well before he eventually, you know, became the king of the hill, so to speak.
I can see the switchboard lighting up here in front of me. People on the Moby Road. Don't forget Nafina. Don't forget Nafina. How could we forget Nafina? He, of course, was instrumental to the successes that they've enjoyed over the years. I remember one time, I think he played a National League game, it was, for Dublin and Parnell Park, and then got a helicopter up to Ballybofey to Finn Park to play for Shamrock Rovers. It certainly wouldn't happen in this day and age. As you said, such a fascinating subject to write about. Did you actually get asked to spend much time with him yourself, George?
There's actually quite a lot of info between Jason's autobiography and the documentary that I think Sport made about him a few years ago. Plus, I would touch base with him a few times, but a bit. But there's a shortage of information, and just going onto YouTube and watching those days back from 95 to 95 All Ireland final, like, there was just so much rich info out there on Jason that it wasn't hard to fill the book.
No, I'm sure it wasn't, and many people to talk about it as well. So what are the details then regarding the book, its availability and that kind of thing, Donnie?
Well, it's coming out. I believe publication date is the 7th of September, which is next week. You can get it in all good bookstores and on the O'Brien Press website, which is o'brien.ie. So, it's available. I believe it's $8.99. It's part of a great series for sort of younger readers who are just interested in the stories of Ireland's great sports people. So, obviously, I'd recommend my own, but there's also a great book about Shay Given that's just come out, and we cover quite a few different athletes in the series.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's the second one in the series after Gooch Cooper. We look forward to the third one if and when that becomes available. Donnie, thank you very much indeed for taking our call this morning, and the very best of luck with the book as well.
Declan, thanks so much, buddy. Talk to you again.
Take care. Thank you very much indeed, Donnie, there, talking about the book on Jason Sherlock, which is due out next week around the 7th of September. We wish him every success with that. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 FM. We were talking about a Dublin GA legend there in Jason Sherlock. We're going to be talking about matters on the field of play in ladies football and hurling after the break. Well, welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport and Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake here, sitting in for Reggie Corrigan till 11 o'clock, listening to the clip of Robbie Brady there scoring that famous goal a couple of years ago. I don't think he got a move in the window, did he? Perhaps someone might correct me if I'm wrong on that, which has been known to happen the odd time. 087-1155-777 is the text number, and WhatsApp is 087-188-1068. Right. Lawmore Lamorach, Eve Park and Crokick, the TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Football Finals take place. Three of them, in fact, one after the other. The big one is at a 4:15. Dublin, the defending champions, going for 5 in a row against the Royals of Meath, appearing in their first ever senior final, although they did, of course, win the intermediate final last year. More about that as we tease it out in our big match preview. Starting now, and absolutely delighted to be joined by a good friend and colleague, Brian Tyres, us TG Cahir, who will be the main lead commentator for the big match tomorrow. Good morning to you, Brian. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad, Declan. How are you up in the big four?
Listen, we're getting ready calmly as we do in the capital, Brian. No problem at all. Looking forward to the big occasion tomorrow. At the start of the year, almost 100% of people would have said Dublin would be in the All-Ireland final, and that's the way it's proven to be. But their opposition would have been Cork. Now, up until a couple of weeks ago, that was certainly going to be the case, it appeared. But the young Royals had other ideas about it, and they've arrived in this final in some style as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think nobody would have predicted that Meath would have got there, you know, even though they were very impressive last year. Dublin, eighth time in the final in a row, so, you know, no news there really. And just to be there for 8 years in a row tells you what sort of group that is, and their mentality and their appetite still for the game and their constant striving for improvement. And I think it was very interesting to hear Mick Bone during the week there reflecting on the hurling final, where Limerick were obviously awesome and Cork suffered at their hands. But, like, he was saying to the media that not alone does he want to win on Sunday, but he'd really like to win in style. That's a kind of an unusual thing, I think, to hear from a manager. And it was interesting. Meath are coming into this, I think, in a great position in a way. First of all, Dublin will be hot favourites. There's no getting away from that. But Meath, you mentioned it's their first final, but obviously it's their fourth appearance in a final in a row in Croke Park. So they've lost two intermediate finals before they won one, which was probably a good thing because you can take lots of learnings from defeats. And I think one of the players speaking there at some point during the weekend saying that had they won it in either the first or the second of the two ones they lost, it might have been a year too soon for them to come up to senior level. But they gained that experience. They won it last year, and like they've just built on that. And they were in the league final again this year, which they won in Croke Park again. So the Croke Park factor is not a factor. Meath are well used to that. The other interesting thing, well, there's many interesting things, obviously, but from Meath's point of view, right, so that's an advantage. They're playing a settled team. So I think this is the third game in a row, at least, that they're the same team. I think they played the same team in the league final. So each player knows exactly what she's doing on the team and what her role is. And obviously they're, you know, extremely comfortable with each other and they trust each other. And you have to have trust in an All-Ireland final between players, I think. And then, of course, they have the X factor up front. Every team needs at least one or two standout forwards. And Meath have that in Vicky Wall and Emma Duggan. So there's a lot of things, you know, that are in Meath's favour. Now, you mentioned that it would have been Cork, presumably. I think Meath and Eamon Murray will certainly have, you know, he know this, right? Certain things went their way in the semi-final. Orla Finn was injured for Cork, didn't start. You know, their key forward. Ciarán Sullivan, probably their other key forward, and definitely their leader in the forwards, injured after 9 or 10 minutes. She was a huge loss. And, like, you would have put your house on Cork to close that game out. Like, they've closed out so many All-Ireland finals. I know there's 3 or 4 they've won by points when they were winning the All-Irelands. So it was, in one way, you could say, a bit of a freak occurrence. Oh, obviously, unbelievable comeback by Meath, and every credit due to them. They forced 2 turnovers. And I'm not taking away from that for a minute. But Eamon Murray will know that 1 or 2 things went their way that day. They'll be hoping that 1 or 2 things fall their way again tomorrow.
Last February, March time, Brian, Mick Bowen would have been sitting anxiously by his phone, waiting for decisions from senior experienced players, shall we say, about their intentions for 2021. You know, your Lindsay Davies, Siobhan McGrath, Sinead O'Hearn, etc. Only one of those players was a negative call in Noelle Healy. Well, negative in the sense she wasn't coming back to play. She's back as part of the medical team, okay, this year.
Yeah.
But to get those positive calls or texts, whatever way they would have come from those players, was a huge, huge boost to him, because to have lost that quality of player and that block of player in one go would have been a serious blow to him.
And that negative, and I understand the way you use the word, right, was actually turned into a positive, because she's been replaced directly in the team by Hannah Tyrrell. Now, what a replacement. So maybe they might have lost the cut, the speed, the thrust that Noelle Healy brought from the middle third. But my God, has Hannah Tyrrell come in with her own skill set? She's the top scorer. I think she's the top scorer in the league. She's the top scorer in the championship. She has this ability. She wouldn't have the raw running power, I think, that Noelle Healy would. But she can play either half forward line, full forward line. She drifts into positions. She has a great understanding of space. She ends up on the end of movements. Extremely accurate. Both feet. So that was a huge plus. And to go back to Lindsay Davey and Sinead Ahern, I mean, two unbelievable servants. I think Sinead started in 2003 and Lindsay in 2004. And I suppose there would have been talk last year, you know, four in a row completed, you know, every chance that these guys will go. But I think particularly in the last day, they actually were outstanding again. And in the absence of what Noelle Healy gave them in the middle third, I think there's a change in their roles. I see Lindsay Davies pulling further back out into the middle third and operating as a kind of a quarterback there. She's directing everything. And Sinead Ahern inside, like the last day, she was outstanding in the first half. Herself and Siobhan Cleaney, I think they got 3 points each. But Hannah Tyrrell has taken some of the pressure of the free kicks off her. So that weight is, some of it at least, removed from her shoulders. And I suppose I saw, again, Lindsay Davey, there's a clip that we have put together for tomorrow's match. And she was speaking about, you know, coming to the end of the trip and how emotional that is going to be. And, you know, she said, you know, she wants to stay there as long as possible. These are her friends, stroke family at the moment. And it will be a big breakup when it happens. But those two, their experience is absolutely invaluable and leaders to the core, the two of them.
Yeah, and I think another player who doesn't get enough credit for what she does and came back this year was Alwyn Carey as well. The defence has had a certain solidity to it as well. So it's going to be a very interesting battle over the course of the hour tomorrow afternoon. Breen, no doubt you're already well prepared, as you usually are, for these big occasions. Is it unfair to ask you, Osberle, where you think the Brendan Martin Cup is going to go tomorrow evening?
No, I mean, look, Dublin are favourites. If you were a betting man, you know, if you wanted your money, you'd put it on Dublin. If you wanted a bit of a thrill, you might go for Meath. So, like, Meath have beaten some serious teams, Cork, Armagh. Like, look at the way they dealt with Amy Mackin's threat in the Armagh game, Blarney Mackin. Now, they were lucky again in the sense that Carla Hannon wasn't there. But, I mean, they've been outstanding in their games up to date. And as Mick Bowen was talking about during the week, like, they have a certain system that it's basically the same team for the last five or six games. So they have a system, and Mick Bowen said it was something he hadn't seen before. They know the system inside out, and they have two quality forwards. Now, having said that, like, Dublin really, you know, how could you bet against Dublin? They're coming to the boil nicely. The semi-final performance, I think, was a really, really good performance there. They know where the threat lies with from the Meath team. And I think it's interesting, you mentioned Alwyn Carey, who's been outstanding, but from that half-back line, he's dropped Siobhan McGrath, player of the year 2 years ago. Now, that shows you the competition in that line alone. But I think it's interesting, Sinead Golds are coming back, Niamh Collins coming back. Like, Vicky Wall can get at teams. And I think if you look at Rachel Kern the last day for Mayo, she was kind of fighting a lone battle up front because Sarah got the early goal, but really was shut out by the Dubs after that. Grace Kelly managed a point, but again, wasn't as influential. But Rachel Cairns had a cut and thrust and a willingness to win the dirty ball about her that did get at the Dubs a bit. And I think Meath are going to have to build on that and take that template. But if you're looking for somebody to win a dirty ball 50-50, no better than Niamh Collins and Sinead Goldrick. So, look, Declan, I think it's going to be a very good game. It certainly won't be a walkover for Dublin or anything like that. Meath are no pressure, full of confidence. But I have to say that I think Dublin will win.
Okay, fair enough. Breen, thank you very much indeed for taking our call this morning, and we look forward to catching up with you pre-match in Croke Park tomorrow afternoon. For those who are not going to be attending the game, the three games indeed are live on TG Car, who have been tremendous broadcast partners and sponsors of the Championship for the last number of years. So, Breen, go to Míle Maith, go to Cora. Breen Tyres there, lead commentator for TG Car, predicting Dublin eventually would win the TG Car All-Ireland Ladies Football Final tomorrow. Right, continuing our preview, during the week I took the opportunity to catch up exclusively with Denise Masterson, who was the first Dublin lady to lift the Brendan Martin Cup back in 2010. We had a nice little chat about the forthcoming final with Meath at Croke Park. Our chat began with memories of that never-to-be-forgotten day back in September 2010 when she lifted the Brendan Martin Cup.
For me personally, it was my second and the previous year we'd had a rough defeat to Cork, you know, so there was, you know, a lot of very focused minds, I suppose. But for me, the abiding memory, I suppose, would have been the performance. And from the throw-in, we just seemed to click, and it just seemed to be a really good day of football for Dublin. And to get over the line was very memorable, I suppose.
You celebrate naturally with the nearest players to you on the pitch, whoever they might have been at the time. But then the man in the blazer comes over to bring you across to the Hogan stand to go up and collect the prize, which is the Brendan Martin Cup. So the feeling of just getting your hands on that as the first Dublin skipper, that's a moment that's going to stay with you forever.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that about the nearest players to you on the pitch, because I actually went the length of it to see Gail Cleaner. She was the vice captain at the time, you know, and we would have worked, I suppose, very closely together, the two of us, you know, and I made a point of getting down to her, you know. I wanted to celebrate the moment with her, and then obviously getting up to lift the cup, it was actually a little bit surreal. I don't have huge memories of, you know, other people say they remember exactly, you know, but no, in ways, you know, it was amazing to lift the cup, but I would have loved to be more with the girls for the celebrations. By the time I got back into the changing room, it was me pal Siobhan McGrath who was the last one there waiting on me, you know, so everyone else was off starting their celebrations at that stage.
Yeah, Denise Masterson there. Now, Hannah Tyrrell, of course, last year was an Irish women's rugby international preparing for Six Nations and World Cup qualifiers, amongst other things. But here she is back in September in the All-Ireland final with Dublin. It's been a whirlwind of a year for her as she prepares for her first All-Ireland final. I took the opportunity to meet up with her recently out in DCU.
Yeah, look, it was something completely unexpected from my point of view, you know. I had aims of heading to a World Cup in October this year, and then obviously COVID hit and that all got postponed, and, you know, things changed for me, and retirement ended up being the option for me, and I ended up having a free summer, and here I am. And it's been a pretty amazing year so far, so we'll see what happens next week.
I mean, you hadn't been involved with the county, obviously, but you were playing club championship last year with Nafin, and you got to the semi-final of the championship last year, so you were keeping your hand in. So, okay, the news breaks that you're back in the Dublin fold this year, and you're like a new signing for the team, and that National League campaign just couldn't have gone much better for you on a personal level, never mind the team.
Yeah, look, as I said, it was kind of a whirlwind couple of weeks there, you know. I joined the squad and I had a lot to learn, still have a lot to learn, but, you know, I was lucky enough to get a bit of game time throughout the National League, and, you know, I was playing decent enough, and we were on a bit of a run, and, yeah, we came away with a Division 1 title, which was great, you know, and I think it showed the depth in our squad. And we had some really good performances from a lot of players, and it led us into championship pretty well. Been great.
Yeah, I mean, the week of the semi-final was interesting, to say the least. I mean, you got married, so congratulations on that. Then you go out and play in an Ireland semi-final and kick over a few handy points as well. So the dream just keeps carrying on for you.
Yeah, look, obviously that was, you know, my wedding was planned for that week long before I joined this squad, but I'm very grateful and lucky that my wedding was a midweek one and it didn't clash with the game. But Mick had a bit of faith in me that week and started me, and it wasn't a perfect team performance, but, you know, we were able to pull the result out of the bag, and we're in another final, and it's great.
In another final, indeed. They're 8th in a row and they're 12th in all since they qualified for their first one back in 2003. So the very best of luck to Mick Bowen and all the girls there ahead of that final tomorrow afternoon at Croke Park. 4:15 is the throw-in time for that. Mm-hmm. Right, going to turn our attention now to domestic matters in the county and hurling, and the Dublin Senior A Hurling Championship began last night at Parnell Park with two games involving heavy hitters in both games. Ballyboden St Enda's defeated Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua by 419 to 116, while the newly crowned League Division 1 champions Nafina had a 427 to 113 victory over Whitehall Columbkill, who included Dublin football star Cormac Costello in their lineup. Cormac, of course, indeed played in All-Ireland Minor Final a few years ago for the county. So, who better then to review those games and to look ahead to the rest of the Dublin A Hurling Championship over the next couple of months than Sean Lane, the former Dublin Minor and under 21 boss as well, of course, as Ballantyre club man. And one question we will be asking ultimately is, can Coola retain their county championship title? First of all, Sean, a very good morning. Thank you indeed for joining us this morning in studio.
Morning, Declan.
Two games, as we said, at the Nell last night, Bowden and Nafina coming through, as would have been pretty much expected beforehand. 419 for Bowden and 427 for Nafina. Two very big scores for the opening night.
Indeed, Declan, and they say in Irish, to stop Matt is Latin here, but there's definitely, I've had a look at the configuration of both groups that are in. Both teams will be extremely happy, not with the performances, but you could safely say with the score difference that they accumulated last night, that both Nafina and Ballyboden will on performances last night, will certainly qualify out of their groups and come into the quarterfinal already. So that's a great start for the campaign.
It's always crucial to get the first win under the belt, isn't it, and take the pressure off you.
Oh, absolutely, particularly in a group where you've only three games, you know. Nafina, like, came out of the blocks last night and they were 1-13 score before the break. I mean, you know, they've the acquisition this year of Liam Rush with them on top of what they have. We all know Nafina won four minor A championships in a row, and you know, the young Currys and all of these young Paul O'Dees and the Peter Feeneys, all of these are now senior hurlers. And you know, when you add Donald Burke onto that and Shane Barrett, they're going to be a formidable team. And you know, they have the luxury now to run down the panel over the next two games and still qualify for the quarterfinals of the championship. So Nafina in a very, very good place.
Yeah, we'll tease out their championship credentials a little bit later in the chat. But there are two games today taking place in the A Championship, both at Parnell Park as well, involving four teams who would be there or thereabouts, you would think, when push comes to shove. Certainly three of them anyway. In the first game, St Jude's taking on St Vincent's, who have been knocking on the door for the last couple of years without actually being able to find the key to unlock it.
Yeah, Vincent, you always have to, you know, when growing up, I the Fogs of 31 senior championships won here in Dublin, but the next one in line is Vincent's with 13. But looking back through it, I may be wrong here, but I think they haven't won it since 1993, which is a huge gap for a Vincent's team. You know, Kieran Barr is manager this year, so he's going to bring huge experience to it. Discipline, you know, qualified accountant, he know how the sums add up, etc. But there's some marvellous players, and Conor Burke had brilliant displays this year for Dublin at midfield. You have Tom Connolly, you have the McBride brothers, and you have John Hetherington. You know, the blue ribbon hasn't gone the north side of the Liffey since 2006 when Craig Kieran bet Ballyboden in that famous final. You know, it has been shared between Coola, Bowden and Kilmacud Crokes, who won it in 12 and 14. But certainly if it's to go across the north side this year, there are three teams that have a really good chance. I see Vincent's having a chance. I see the work that Johnny McGurk is continuously doing with Bridget's as also having a chance. And with Cullen McCallaghan at the helm in Nafina, I actually think that they have a chance as well of perhaps getting to a final and maybe learning from it this year. They're a very, very young side, but I think they're playing some lovely hurling as well.
Yeah, you mentioned John Hetherington there of Vincent's. His parents, Patsy and the great Hedjo can probably relax a little bit this afternoon before the big event. Their daughter Niamh and John's sister, of course, is playing in the ladies' football final.
Yeah, I sent Hedjo, we called it the older man Hedjo, and I know the two boys are called Hedjo as well, but to us, Hedjo will always be Kieran. And I sent him a text last night to wish Niamh the very, very best of luck in the All-Ireland final. Great family, fantastic pedigree there. I know Patsy, the mother, played for Dublin in an All-Ireland, I think, final against Clare. And Kieran himself obviously played senior hurling for Dublin in two Leinster finals, but also was on the Anthony Daly ticket, won the National League and also won the Leinster Championship in 11 and 13. So the best of luck to Niamh tomorrow and to the Dublin ladies.
Indeed. Now, defending champions Coola are starting off their title defence against Kilmacud Crokes. It's a blockbuster game in prospect, but how it plays out in the first game of the championship remains to be seen. 6 o'clock this evening at Parnell Park. The winds have changed a little bit, have been blowing through Coola in terms of a change of management and that, and amongst others Eddie Brennan added to the coaching ticket there this year. They won't be too far away from it again, surely.
Yeah, they won't, but if you look at the groups, Declan, they're today's match is almost like a knockout game, and if they don't win today, they could have another knockout game against Bridget's. There's Bridget's, Crokes and Cooler in the one group, so only two can come out. So again, the first game is going to be really, really important here today, because whoever loses this game is going to be really on the back foot. They're going to have to beat Bridget's to actually qualify for the quarterfinals. Cool, have a few dropouts. Maybe Paul Schute and Colin Cronin won't feature this year for different reasons, but they still have a formidable team. I mean, if you take the goalkeeper in Sean Brennan. They're managed now by Johnny Toomey with, as you said, Eddie Brennan on the ticket. But they're still a very, very solid backs. You can play Jake Malone at the back, Keane O'Callaghan, Sean Moran, and also John Shane. And up front, like, you're going to have the two Tracys, you know, Mark Schute, and of course your King Kong is going to be up there as well. Don't forget that Liam Murphy then also played for Coola for Dublin, the All-Ireland Under-20 final. There's another addition that they can add in there. There's plenty of young lads out there. I've seen Coola playing twice this year, once against my own club, Ballantyre, but also against the Fogs, and they won't be far off. But are they gone back 5% then, Declan? Maybe 6%? They probably are, but will that be good enough? It may be, but I do believe that Vincent's, I do believe that Nafina, I think Crokes have a great project going. They've won the last three Dublin Minor A championships. I think they will cement, I think they will win a championship, but I don't think it'll be this year. And Bowden are never, never far off, and I see Paul Ryan scoring goals last night, and Simon Lambert, and when they've players like that, they're going to be thereabouts as well.
I see Malachy Travers, Banish Door,
yeah,
on the
yeah.
Fairhouse Road now as
yeah,
well.
I think
so tremendous experience there.
Absolutely. I mean, Malachy, as you know, would have been, I mentioned that Crave had won the last championship Northside in 2006, but let's not forget that Ballyboden came along and won 5 in a row, which would have featured Malachy Travers in many of them. They won't be far off, Ballyboden either. They're definitely blending in a new team, but as I said, Shay Dorkin, Simon Lambert, Niall McMurrow is still around, Finn McGarry is still holding nets there, and Aidan Mellett and Paul Ryan up front, they're not going to be a million miles off. They'll be a very, very hard team to beat, but will it come down to whoever in the end, Coola, whoever beats Coola will certainly win it. And you'd have to have a look at the groups. Lucan are in the prime position to qualify out of their group as well. And you have the McCaffrey Brothers, the Crummies, Peter Kelly. They're thereabouts. They were beaten in a final in 2013. I may be wrong, but I think they've lost 6, if not 7, semi-finals. So they're all about. And if you remember last year, Crokes had given Bowden an almighty hiding in the round robin basis, but when Lucan got as far as him in the quarter final, Lucan stood up and were able to get across the line against a very, very good Crokes team last year.
So I know it's only the opening weekend and we've only played two matches, but if you were a betting man now going into your local bookies, who would you be putting the few bob on?
Well, if you look at the groups, and I don't want to offend anybody, but you'd have to look at the 8 teams to get to the quarterfinal first before you pick it. I think Nafina will come out of the group one with either Crave or Ballantyre or Whitehall, probably not likely now after the score difference last night. That group could end up with 3 teams on 2 points. Vincent's and Lucan will definitely come out of their group, would be my call. This is the big call. Who's going to come? Which two are going to come out between Coola, Bridget's and Crokes? My call there will be Coola will come out. I have a sneaking suspicion that Bridges will come out with them as well, and not Crokes, because they're in a rebuilding mode. And then I actually think that Bowden and Foggs will come out of the other group. So who gets drawn against who? You know, Coole, certainly they've won five of the last six senior championships. They still have 10 or 11 lads with double All-Irelands. If they can get it right, and a change of management is a good thing, if they get it right, they're the team to beat. But I do believe that the Vincents, the Nafina and the Bridges, the three Northside teams, are really going to challenge them this year.
Are you running for election the next time? I asked you who was going to win it and you gave me four teams.
Well, if you were going to ask me that question, you'd gather that I was running for election on the north side. But no, I think that's the way it'll fall out. Okay. I think there's a changing of the guard coming in senior hurling here, and it could go the other way.
Okay, interesting, just running out of time here, but one point, Galway are looking for a new hurling manager for 2022. We know Matty Kenny's been with Dublin for the last few years, but do you think perhaps that the lure of going home might be too big, or is Davy Fitzgerald going to end up there quickly, do you think?
Well, the 2 points, Davy, would Davy be a fit for Galway people? God, I'm not too sure he would be, and I know they're very near neighbours there. Davy is a very aggressive approach. Would it work in Galway? Didn't work with Gerald Lochnan. Davy's a good manager. Davy, he stays sometimes too long in places, but Davy is a very, very good manager for the first two seasons. In relation to Matty Murphy or Matty Kenny, I think it'll be a savage loss to Dublin Hurling. I think he's on a 3-year project. Toogan made a huge improvement last year on the previous year, and if he stays, I think along with the Dublin under-20s that played in the All-Ireland, we can use four or five of them next year as forwards, and I would hate to lose Matty Kenny to Dublin Hurling.
Yep. Good, strong sentiments. Thank you very much indeed, Sean, for that. If you're going to any championship match, including Crumlin versus Raheny in St. Anne's Park this evening at 6 o'clock, enjoy them. Thanks indeed to Sean for joining us this morning. Rather, Dublin's Talking Sports, Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We're back after the commercial break. It's Alan Cawley and football all the way to 11. Sunshine 106.8. Very welcome back to the final part of Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie here on Sunshine 106.8. Glad to say the sun is peering through the sky here now down in Dublin's Docklands. Hopefully it'll brighten up much more before the end of the day as well. One man who always brightens up our day on this programme is the legendary Alan Cawley. Good morning to you, Al.
You're too kind, Declan. You're too kind.
Well,
but how are you?
I can see the money landing in my account on my phone as I speak. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. Listen, I posed a question a little bit earlier on there about Robbie Brady. He plays on our clip intro clips. He didn't actually get a move in the end in the window, did he, this week, that I recall?
No, he didn't. No, he still didn't. But I thought there was a really nice gesture from Stephen Kenny yesterday inviting him along to train with the squad in the Aviva. I don't know if you saw that, Declan, but he was in amongst the group, because he's obviously been training here on his own, from what I hear, and looking out for a club. But I think the key thing for Robbie now, I'm sure the clubs that are probably interested in are looking at maybe the fact that he's been injured a fair bit over the last wee while, and then I suppose the wages might be a factor. But I think the key thing for Robbie is just to get back playing with a club and not let that dictate in terms of where he's going for his future, because I'm sure he's made money over the years. He just needs to get back playing, because he's a very talented player, very talented boy. But you don't want to see him training on his own while everybody else is kicking on with their career, you know?
Yeah, he's too good of a talent to be left on the side, and he's got a couple of years left in him yet. Memories or thoughts, Alan, of Farrow on Wednesday night, so near yet so far from a very, very positive result, which probably would have changed the course of this Irish team in some respects, do you feel, had we held on and got the draw, if not the win?
Yeah, it would have been obviously huge, Declan, in terms of if we were to get the result. Not just the fact that who we were playing, but I think just for Stephen's reign alone, because still there's probably a few detractors towards what Stephen is trying to do and all that kind of stuff. So the only way to dampen down that or to quieten those people down is obviously to be picking up results. And the first thing they'll tell you now after the game tonight is, regardless of the good performance, we still didn't get the result. So I think it's hugely important going into the game today that obviously we do pick up the result. The performance was very encouraging against Portugal, and probably the best they played under Stephen. They were absolutely brilliant, all the lads, and it was just such a pity that they couldn't hang on, and unfortunate really. And I think you look at Stephen's tenure as well, he's been very unfortunate, and I know you don't always get what you deserve, especially in football, but you do need some sort of a bit of luck along the way, and he's had no luck whatsoever, Declan, I suppose, with the COVID stuff and all that kind of thing. So I think what it showed the other night is the fact that just what Stephen is trying to do, we could all see that. We could all see there was a plan, a structure. Everyone knew their job, knew their role. We were brave in possession. We tried to play out from the back at times and do the right thing. I know in the second half was back to the wall a little bit, as you'd expect, the more that Portugal were pushing on to get the result. But I think overall, people have to be encouraged by what they saw. But the key thing now is to follow that up with a good performance tonight. And most importantly, Declan, is a win. We have to get a win today.
Absolutely. Saying it to Ken Doherty there, on we've been talking about performances and the way that they've been improving over the course of time since Stephen took over, but it is now really time to translate that into results, and there's no better place to start than Azerbaijan from 5 o'clock this evening.
100%, yeah, because it's no good going out to Faro and putting in the performance that we did, albeit that we didn't get the results, but coming home then and obviously putting in a flat performance now. And I think that's the one thing that can only beat them today, is if it's a little bit after the Lord Mayor show, that sometimes you can see that the lads can go out and maybe be a bit flat, go through the motions a little bit. I'm not suggesting that's what they'll do, but I'm just saying that's the dangers that kind of you can encounter sometimes after a positive result against a team where you're not expected to get a result. So I think it's hugely important the approach to game today is if they're going out to play a Portugal or a top nation and give Azerbaijan the respect that they deserve and go out and put in a performance something similar to what we saw the other night. And I've no doubt if we play that way, we'll definitely get the results. But I think just for Stephen alone, he needs a win now at this stage. And if we were to pick up the win today, Declan, you go into the game Tuesday night with a lot of confidence. Obviously, the away game against Serbia, we gave them a great game, and we were unfortunate to lose 3-2. So there's a lot of hope that we could beat Serbia Tuesday night as well. And if you were to come out of this week, I know I'm probably getting ahead of myself now, but if you were to come out of this week with 6 points out of 9, I'm sure Stephen would have snapped your hand off for that at the beginning of the week. So there's lots to play for in the next couple of games. And obviously today, you can't look too far ahead. Today is the most important, and get the 3 points.
Yeah, it's an important block of time for him as well. He had the lead up to the Portugal game on Wednesday, the couple of days since, and now he'll have a couple of more days after that again before the Serbian game on Tuesday. Let's look domestically now. This SSE Airtricity League title race is getting a little bit more interesting after last night. Shamrock Rovers beaten 2-1 by Finn Harps. It's their fourth straight loss in the third different competition, coupled with St Pat's win over Longford Town at Richmond Park. All of a sudden, their level at the top of the table, albeit with Rovers having 2 games less played.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Declan. Great for us tuning in. Obviously, the neutrals from the outside and all, but I definitely think we will have a title race. And Shamrock Rovers have been very disappointing. I don't even think in the last 3 or 4 weeks, all season. Now, I know people will argue they're top of the league, but with the resources they have and the squad and the budget, and when you think there was no Dundalk really this year, there was no Bohemians at the early part of the season. I know Bohemians have picked up, but their nearest challengers were, for me, surprise challengers in Sligo and St. Pat's. So they should be further ahead, I think, Shamrock Rovers. And if you think of the amount of late goals they've got and got out of jail on numerous occasions in games over the season, if they weren't to pick up the couple of points in those games, they wouldn't even be top. So I think they've been disappointing overall, and especially in the last 3 or 4 games, as you say, they've gone out of Europe on a bit of a whimper. They were well beaten in the cup last Sunday. I was in Daly Mount. Bohemians were exceptional, fully deserved the victory. And then to go up to Finn Harps and lose as well, when you're hoping that maybe they were thinking they'd get back on track. I think we have to give Finn Harps credit as well though, Declan, because that's their 6th win in a row. So it would be unfair just to say it's down to Shamrock Rovers maybe not playing well or not performing. I, from what I'm hearing from people who were at the game, Finn Harps fully deserves the victory. They scored 2 great goals as well, and they've been on a brilliant run themselves, and obviously they beat Derry last week to get themselves into the quarter final of the cup. So it's been a really good run of weeks for Ollie Horgan, but certainly from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, bitterly disappointing, and opens it up for obviously St Pat's, who capitalised with the win last night, and Dale feel as though they're still in with a real shout of winning the league.
Played really well last night, I have to say. 3-2 was not really a fair reflection on the way that the game went. But you're talking about great goals there. What about the 2 goals for Bohemians and Daly Mount last Sunday, particularly Andy Lyons with the winner? What a strike.
Absolutely brilliant. It was a great day, to be fair. And Bohemians are riding the crest of a wave, obviously coming off the back of the European run as well. And as I said, it's just pity about that start that they had, because for me, I think they're the closest challengers in terms of the best team nearest to Shamrock Rovers. I know that doesn't reflect on the table at the moment, but certainly I think they're the best team and the nearest to Shamrock Rovers in quality, certainly. I know St. Pat's have had a great season as well, and Stephen O'Donnell is doing good things. But I just think Bohemians have the makings of a really, really good team there, Declan. And you look at, I suppose, the goals last week. Andy Lyons, young lad, playing with the under-21s yesterday. Ross Tierney playing with the under-21s. He was brilliant as well. Dawson Devoy on the bench. And Ali Coote's strike as well last week was unbelievable. So it was a great day for Bohemians last week. As I say, they're riding the crest of the wave. And it's good for the league in general as well. We need as many challengers as possible. Fair play to St. Pat's. They're the ones putting it up to Shamrock Rovers at the moment. And hopefully Bowes can keep kind of going up the table, because after the brilliant run they had in Europe, they need to qualify for Europe again this year, because it'd be such a shame if they miss out on all the experiences that they had, obviously, over the last few weeks.
Yeah, and of course, a team that's going to probably rely on the Cup to qualify for Europe next season is Dundalk. Their poor domestic form continuing last night with a draw against Waterford. But a big game at the Showgrounds is next Friday night. St. Patrick's Athletic travelling to the northwest to take on Liam Buckley's Sligo Rovers. Big one that.
Huge game, yeah. Yeah, Sligo just kind of, they stopped the rot really last night with a draw at a nil-all. So they'll be hoping maybe to get back to winning ways, but it's been a poor run for them over the last 2 weeks. And obviously St. Pat with eyes on the title now. It's a huge game. It's live on RT as well, Declan. So we're down there covering. I'm looking forward to it. And the fact that there's more people allowed back into the grounds as well. I think there was more all around the country last night in all the different grounds. So that's a huge help as well to the clubs to see people back in the stadiums.
Yeah, I think about 2,000 in Richmond Park last night. You know, what a carnival atmosphere. So many people who hadn't been fortunate enough to have been to a game before last night, but they certainly enjoyed it, as indeed I'm sure did a lot of supporters who made the journey to their local LOI grounds last night. Al, enjoy the Aviva this evening and indeed Tuesday night as well against Serbia. And we look forward to seeing what you look like on the telly next Friday night as well. That's always interesting.
Thanks a million, Declan. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Thanks very much. Alan Colley there joining us with a look at the international and also the domestic stuff as well. I think that's pretty much all we've got time for on the programme this morning. I'd just like to take a very special opportunity to thank all our guests for joining us. Jane McNamara, even though she's from Mayo, for her excellent production work. Dublin's Talking Sport will be back next Saturday morning at the same time, 9 to 11. Saturday Live with Carol Dooley is after the news at 11, and we'll talk to you next Saturday morning just after 9 a.m. Until then, take care, folks.